Timbrell Kyathi.
Kyathi?
Kyathi.
Wow. I have to practice that.
Yeah.
Kyathi?
Kyathi.
Kyathi. I like that.
Thank you.
Kyathi.
It's Sanskrit.
Sanskrit. Okay. Mm-hmm. I learned something already.
Yeah.
Got it. You ready?
Yep.
This is the Doers. This is the Doers Podcast.
Do it.
I love that you're doing that.
I do what I do.
Conversations with creators,
innovators,
and entrepreneurs from Lancaster and the Central Pennsylvania region.
These are the people who make Central PA a great place
to live, work, and play.
Start again.
I'm Jason Mundock. Today on the program, it's Timbrell Kyathi, founder of Lush Bazaar, a socially conscious fashion line and boutique located in downtown Lancaster, Pennsylvania. Timbrell has a fresh outlook on fashion that is considerably different from fast fashion or mass-produced, low-quality, disposable clothing.
When you go to an art show, or, you know, you look at something and it speaks to you. And
right.
I feel like your clothing should do that as well, because it represents who you are.
Born in India but raised here in the U.S., Timbrell grew up with an interest in learning more about her homeland. After spending over 4 years living and working in the area where she was born, Timbrell returned to Lancaster and founded Lush Bazaar, combining her love for fashion design and her love for her native culture. Her clothing line is handmade at a workspace in India where her employees enjoy fair living wages and working conditions, part of her mission to produce ethical fashion.
I really put a lot of time and energy into making sure that I can be as ethical as possible in making clothing.
You can find out about all of the cool things Timbrell is doing with her Lush Bazaar clothing line at lushbazaar.com or visit her in downtown Lancaster at the Lush Bazaar Boutique located at 50 North Queen Street.
Cool, awesome. This is the Doers Podcast.
Brought to you by The Candy Factory.
Co-working in Lancaster.
I am a fashion designer.
Is that right?
Yes.
That's your that would be like your trade.
Yeah.
I'm a fashion designer.
I am an ethically sourced fashion designer.
Okay.
Because I do it ethically.
Tell me about that a little bit.
So fashion is one of my favorite things in the world. But nowadays, fashion is also a terrible thing because of the way clothing is being made.
Right.
So I am making clothing in a socially conscious way and helping people around me by making clothing.
And what's the output of that? Like, how do I buy your clothes?
So you can buy it online at lushbazaar.com or at my boutique in Lancaster City.
Hey, hey.
Yeah.
And when did you open?
November of last year.
November of last year.
It is about 250 square feet of...
of awesome.
Awesome. Yeah, of colorful clothing and just an atmosphere of openness and acceptance and just handcrafted art. So I take the clothing that I make as like art. So each piece is so unique and special from the next.
And this is all clothes that you designed and had manufactured.
Yes.
Is what you sell through Lush Bazaar.
Yes.
What's that like? I mean, what's that process like?
It is really hard. So I really put a lot of time and energy into making sure that I can be as ethical as possible in making clothing.
Okay.
So that means from like getting the hand woven fabrics, from hand dyeing the fabrics, from making sure that it's all done in like the most environmental friendly way possible. It takes a lot of energy to do that. It's not just like one morning I wake up and I'm like, okay, I'm going to just make this and somehow it's going to happen.
Right.
It's a lot. Well, and also because my workspace is in India and that's a 12-hour difference. So I am up till probably...
So you're basically working third shift.
Yeah, pretty much. And then I go to my store and work there. So I probably sleep for like 5 hours maybe.
Okay.
If I'm lucky.
Take me through the life cycle of, I have an idea for, say, a shirt.
Okay. So for you to come in the store, we would do like a custom design appointment.
Oh,
and
okay.
You would come in.
Oh, so like literally if I have an idea for sure. Okay,
yeah.
let's talk through this.
Yeah, so like let's say you were in like, I love your clothing, but I want something a different color or different fit. So I say, hey, let's walk you through this. I have swatches of fabrics that you can choose from. And then I have a swatch of colors that we can dye. And I say, do you want this color, you choose it. I measure you. So that's like pretty much the most perfect fit.
Right.
And then within like 2 to 3 months, depending on how much work is done, you'll get your special order.
So, okay. Now there's a gap there between me saying this is what I want and me receiving it. What happens behind the scenes?
Yeah.
Pull the curtain back a little bit.
So after that, I actually, but depending on what kind of shirt you want, I either have that cutting already done or I have to make a cutting for this piece. So I make the cutting, have it all measured out, then I send it to my staff.
Okay.
And then they go and work with the weavers to get the fabric if it's not there, or else if we have the fabric, that's great. We hand dye it. So that's like a whole process because I try to be use environmental friendly dye.
Sure.
So a lot of marigolds, a lot of turmeric, a lot of indigo. And then if I can't do that, then we'll also use like other synthetic dyes. But okay. That's like a process of knowing if it'll work or not. And then after we dye the fabric, we wait about a week or so till like the fabric is like dry. And then after that, we go and we start making it. We, as in my team and I, because even though they're far away, we're pretty much all on the same team. And then after that, we go through testing to make sure the shirt is good, you know, make sure there's no needles or threads or anything coming out, and then it ships over. So it takes about 2 weeks to ship.
This could be a special shirt. I mean,
yeah, it is. And a lot of people are like, oh, that's so expensive. But I'm like, there is so much involved in making this like your shirt. So I really see it as like a piece of art.
Yeah.
So if you would just say I want like a linen shirt that's dyed, it would probably be around $85 to $105 depending on what you get dyed, which is still pretty reasonable.
Yeah, I was going to say you can walk into just a Macy's or something and see a shirt that's, I don't go to Macy's, so I'm kind of making this up, but you know what I mean? Like $85 for a shirt, I wouldn't walk out yelling.
No.
And I'm being offended.
And I really wanted to make it like cost friendly as much as I could. So I look at it as like when you go to a art show or, you know, you look at something and it speaks to you. And I feel like your clothing should do that as well because it represents who you are. So why are you wearing something that you are just like, oh, it's okay. It makes me, I like it. Or else you could wear something that's like, this is who I am. Like this color represents me or what I love.
Now, most of what's in your store, I assume, is not these custom designs. So do you have a line of products that you're just sort of selling as well?
Yes. So I actually have a collection every season
that
I always have in my store and online. And then I also have started a home goods collection. So that's called the Coming Home Collection. And I work with women of abusive relationships that left that abusive relationships and are trying to restart their home. So they left their home to rebuild their home. And then they're helping you build your home, I guess, by...
With these things that they're making and they're creating and you're selling.
Yes. And we have jewelry at the shop. We have scarves. So we have other things that, you know, you could just pick up really quick.
Are those women on your team as well in India?
Yes.
Oh, okay. So So all the manufacturing is done there.
Yes. And then we do alterations, if any, in Lancaster.
Got it. Okay.
This is the Doers Podcast.
Visit us online at coworkinginlancaster.com.
Home of the Candy Factory, a co-working space in Lancaster, Pennsylvania.
Now, I know you're also running this series of workshops, and there's a connection between the store and the workshops that you're conducting each year. Why don't you first tell us about the workshop itself, what that looks like, why you're doing them, and then let's draw that connection.
Okay, so I started a workshop called the Cultured Wedding Workshop.
Okay.
And it's about focusing on bicultured couples and cultured couples. And what my goal is to have a space where vendors, wedding vendors and photographers can learn about cultures and learn about people and traditions so that they can better serve bicultured couples and cultured couples in our community.
Tell me about the beginning of this idea. Tell me where, you know, how did this spark happen?
Well, I had a couple cultured couples come to my store for custom wedding dresses, which I do as well. And they were like, you know, do you know any place that, you know, helps with cultured couples or has a space that understands our culture or photographers that know how to photograph our culture? And it just became a really big conversation.
Sure.
And then it took me back to when I was a kid growing up in Lancaster and I would see all these weddings and they were not anything that I wanted for myself because I wanted a very big Indian wedding and every vendor that I saw was just doing the very typical American weddings. And it's like, wow, that's something that I had so many questions about growing up that other people have. So I really wanted to tap into that to hopefully make a change for vendors and photographers as well as the couples to find a place where they all can understand each other.
And what was the reception like? I mean, how did you put that out there?
I contacted a few photographers I knew and I was like, hey, I have this idea. And they were on board. They're like, this is awesome. And I think in the wedding industry, which I'm not sure if you know anything about, they do a lot of style shoots. So like to make sure that their products are out there. So these photographers have been doing style shoots for a while, which is like trying to reenact a wedding or reenact moments, but they've never done a cultural style shoot. So they're like, oh, this is something we've never done, but we need in our portfolio, we need on our website. So it kind of just started from there.
Who conducted the workshop? Like, who was the presenter, the facilitator?
Well, the very first one I did was a Jewish cultured one. And I interviewed a very sweet 82-year-old woman who was Jewish from Boston who moved to Lancaster.
Yeah.
And we started with her, like, learning about her culture. And then we did that for about an hour and a half. And then we broke out to the session where you can photograph a Jewish wedding. So I went with every vendor I work with and tried to make it as real and authentic as possible to be a Jewish wedding.
Wow.
Yeah.
So this isn't limited to, like, Indian culture. This is across the board.
I want to try to tap into every culture, especially in our community. We're such a welcoming community in Lancaster.
Yeah,
and there are so many cultures around. So I'm really trying to dive into every single one. So I've done Jewish, Greek Orthodox, Indian, and Chinese, and then Mexican.
Wow.
Yeah.
That sounds like just a ton of fun, too, to get together, learn about these cultures, stage photos, talk about how this would work.
It is. And I honestly feel like I'm planning a wedding every single time, like for myself. It's weird because it's like I try to focus on like what I would like, but then I'm like, oh, wait, this is more culturally. It's just interesting, like the whole process. And it definitely takes away like me wanting to plan my wedding, because by the time I'm done with it, I'm like, oh, that was a lot to do.
Right. Absolutely.
This is the Doers Podcast, conversations with
creators, innovators, and entrepreneurs
from all around Central Pennsylvania.
Talk me through the genesis of all these great things you're doing now. Like, you know, bring me up to speed.
Oh man, where do I start?
You can go back as far as you'd like.
Well, let's start with Timbrell being a little girl in Lancaster County.
Yeah, absolutely.
My family moved here from Texas when I was 5 years old.
Okay.
And at that point in my life, there were no Indians in my elementary school. And I grew up, you know, in like, I felt like I was kind of straddling two different worlds, like my Indian culture, which my parents were very strong and like taught us. And then I would go into like the school system, and it's like a very American system.
Are you first generation? Did your parents come over from India?
Yes, I am first generation. And I'm the firstborn. So, and I was born in India and came here when I was a few months old. So, I mean,
Got it.
I kind of always felt connected to my Indian roots as well as America. And I think one moment that really was profound to me is when I was in elementary school at a private school at the time, and the teacher confused my Indian heritage for being Native American.
Oh my.
Yeah. So I think that always stuck in my head as like, wow, people really did not understand my culture in this community at the time. And after, you know, going to high school here, I went to college around here. I just was like really feeling like I needed to know more about my roots because I was kind of suppressing it and not learning about it. So after college, I wanted to be a doctor. And then I worked in healthcare for a while. And I realized that's not what I wanted to do because I just did not feel like fulfilled. So I decided to move back to India and kind of like learn about my culture and just volunteer in like my community that I, you know, was born in, but didn't really know.
Mm-hmm.
And it just changed my life and my world.
Oh, absolutely. Do you have family there?
I do.
So when you went back, was it like welcome home, Timbrell?
No, it was the exact opposite.
It was like,
opposite.
Who are you?
Yeah, it was the exact opposite. I think, I mean, I love my family. They're great. I'm not very close to them, obviously, because I lived here most of my life. But I was like the American girl in India. And in America, I'm the Indian girl.
Right.
So it's like, well, which one am I? And the family in India did not understand what I was doing. Because at a 25-year-old girl should be married. And it's like, why are you here?
Did you understand what you were doing?
I had
or were
no
you just
clue.
Sort of figuring it out?
I was figuring it out. And I think I was taking it as like a journey of like trying to understand my roots.
Yeah.
Because I knew nothing about my roots. I mean, I knew what my parents taught me, but they didn't really teach me like about my language. Like they would always speak to me in English and I wanted to learn like the languages. So it was interesting.
Did you do that? I mean, were you able to kind of immerse yourself to a point where you felt like culturally connected?
I did. I actually started teaching English at an underprivileged school. And when I went there, I was like, oh, well, this is going to be easy. But it's not easy if you can't speak their language and they can't speak yours. So
I can't even imagine what that's like.
It was a mess, like, the first week, because I'm, like, using my hands as, like, a way to try to explain it to them. And then I was like, you know what? I'm just going to learn how to speak Telugu, which was my native language. And it was just so cool to see, like, I was speaking, like, very preschool Telugu, and these kids were speaking very preschool English, and we connected. It was pretty cool.
How long did you do that?
4.5 years.
Wow.
Yeah.
So you lived in India for that extended period of time.
Yeah.
And then what brought you back to Lancaster?
There was some, like, my mother had some health issues, and it was, like, the time to come back. But
right.
I also felt like it was the time to come back and, like, grow this business and this idea that I had when I was over there.
Tell me about the genesis of the business then.
I actually gave a TEDx talk about this, so that's something you should definitely check out.
I will link
out.
To it in the show, in the show post.
But I actually have always loved fashion. And when I remember in high school, I used to do sketches, like, in all my notes of, like, dresses and skirts and whatever. And so when I went to India, I needed, like, a whole new wardrobe because I couldn't wear jeans and like the normal t-shirts or whatever, because it wasn't culturally acceptable. So I had to kind of go to the bazaar and find new fabrics and kind of, like, make my own clothing. And during the process, while I was trying to go to the bazaar and get stuff, this lady who I never met before came up to me and was like, do you need help with that? And even though I could only speak a little bit of Telugu at the time, I was like, how are you going to help me? And she's like, well, I know how to sew, and I could definitely give you a great deal instead of you going to, like, one of those tailors, and they'll charge you way more.
Right.
And it just started from there.
Wow.
She, you know, I got to know her and her story, and she was a widowed mother of two boys. And in India, widows are not really treated with respect. So she was really trying to hustle to try to get the money to, like, send her boys to school.
Wow.
And it inspired me.
Yeah. Tell me about the ethical piece to this. You know, I know a little bit about how the fashion industry has evolved over the years in not such a positive way. I remember as a kid, you know, in the 70s and the 80s, you know, the seasons of fashion were very specific to, you know, it was like kind of the school year for kids, you know. You had the back to school stuff, and you had the winter and the summer, and it was pretty much like that was it. And it seems like over the years, there's just been this acceleration in the seasons where there's just always new stuff coming out. Talk to me about your perspective on that.
So fast fashion has really taken over our world. And I think it's because we live in a time where we can get things so quickly.
Right.
You know, just go online, order it, and you have it in 2 days. And so the mindset of clothing has been like, if I need that, I'll get it. And I don't really know where it comes from or how it's made. But it's really caused a huge, huge negative impact on our world because there's so many pieces of clothing being made that within like 2 months or 3 months, they're sent to landfills right away, you know, because the process of fashion has just evolved so much. And I just believe that with my fashion brand, and what I'm trying to do is like the art of slow fashion, the art of really wanting something that you will wait to have it come to you perfect. And everything that I do from pretty much start to finish is ethically or socially conscious, because the people that work for me, my employees, they are getting paid a fair wage. The fabrics that we're using are hand woven. So I really have this as like a way to kind of, not that it's going to end fast fashion right away, but it's going to kind of bring in perspective like what we can choose instead of choosing fast fashion. And most of the clothing, you know, like, people wear it like 2-3 times and it rips, or, you know, like they don't really want to wear it anymore. It shrinks. And it's like, that's because it's not really a lot of time and effort goes into making them.
The perspective is that the fashion is disposable.
Yes.
So if you're creating it from that perspective, and your expectation is that it's disposable, I'll just go buy something else next week, then there is no call for quality.
Exactly.
So I love this idea that I can really tailor make something that speaks to me and then speaks for me, and I can wear it for a long time because of the quality's there.
Yeah, and maybe you'll give it to your children someday, or, you know, pass it on, because that's what used to be done with fashion.
Sure.
You know, like wedding dresses used to be made, and they used to, you know, be made by the grandmother or something and then sent off to her daughter, and that was so beautiful and had so much meaning to it. And nowadays that's not really even thought of. You find wedding dresses on the rack at Goodwill within like 6 months or 7 months. You know, and they put a lot of money into that. So that was my goal, is to kind of just change that outlook on fashion.
You're listening to the Doers Podcast, brought to you by The Candy Factory,
a co-working space in Lancaster, Pennsylvania.
Visit us online
at coworkinginlancaster.com.
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 I'm Jason Mundock, talking today with Tim Brelchiotti, a fashion designer and entrepreneur from Lancaster whose Lush Bazaar fashion line and boutique has a mission to produce ethically sourced and manufactured high-quality clothing. Her manufacturing space is located in India, where Tim Brell was born, and where she employs artisans who receive fair living wages and working conditions. What do you think the impact is of what you've done so far, what you've built with Lush Bazaar?
I can see from the space in India that the women and the men that I employ, they are able to send their kids to school and get an education and kind of change like their background. And to me, that speaks wonders.
Yeah, that's changing lives.
Yeah. And so from that standpoint, I absolutely love what that's doing in India. Now, when you come to America and bringing the clothing to Lancaster and beyond, I think it sparks a conversation. Do I want to go to the mall and buy something that's really quick, or can I wait for something that I know I'll always cherish and possibly send to someone else?
So that's changing a mindset in this country. You're obviously a doer.
Yes.
You went to India, you came back, you had this idea, this spark, you did it, and it's rolling. So where do you go from here? Because you're a visionary, and visionaries are always thinking of the future.
Yes. So I would love to see Lush Bazaar be a franchise.
Okay.
And really just impact different communities, not just Lancaster. So
other people can buy into the concept, they can bring it to their community.
Yeah, and see it change their community. I've seen how much change has come from Lush Bazaar being in Lancaster, honestly, in just less than a year. Just the conversations that have been talked about and people coming in and asking about cultural appropriation, or, hey, I'm going to Indian wedding, I don't know what to wear. Just these conversations that are coming up.
Right.
And I think there are so many other communities that need to have this conversation.
Do you ever see Lush Bazaar going beyond India?
I do. There's a few other countries that I have been researching and like looking into like the fashion world and what's going on. And I just really want to make a bigger impact.
Yeah, that's really cool.
Thank you.
It's great that you're seeing beyond those borders as well, right? That you're not just, I mean, you obviously have a passion for your heritage, and I think that's wonderful, but it's also really refreshing to see that it's not just your heritage. It's recognizing that other people are having these same experiences, and that other people have these same needs, right? That we need to have the conversation not just about this one culture, but about all these different cultures. That's really fantastic.
Thank you. I think we're all humans, right? Like,
right.
We're all connected somehow.
As an entrepreneur, getting this business off the ground, any setbacks?
Tons of setbacks. I think the very first year for me as starting my business and a brick and mortar, it was the hardest year of my life.
Really?
The hardest year of my life. They say it's your make it or break it year.
Yeah.
And that's definitely true.
So you've come through that. Right. The store's been open for just almost a year.
Almost a year.
And do you feel like it's getting easier?
Almost. I feel like every week I'm learning something new, but I think it's preparing me for something bigger. So I would say as an entrepreneur, it's like, don't give up. If you know you have something, there will be setbacks. I mean, I had my workspace vandalized and, robbed, and it was hard. And, when even starting this business in Lancaster, there were some hiccups we even starting the store, but it's like, it was so worth it looking back. Cause it's like,
push through.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much for taking a few minutes to tell us about Lush Bazaar and about all the great things that you're doing for this community and that community in India.
Thank you so much. I appreciate this.
The Doers Podcast is produced by Jason Mundock at The Candy Factory,
a co-working space located in Lancaster, Pennsylvania.
Find links and show notes for this podcast and all of our episodes online
at The Candy Factory website,
coworkinginlancaster.com.
Subscribe to the show wherever you get your podcasts.
And keep on doing.
Keep on doing.
Keep on doing.
What you love to do.
This is going to be such a success.
Hey friends, Jason Mundock here. All of the voices in our intro and outro are actually Candy Factory members.
Wait, what?
It's a great community, and yes, we have a good time because frankly, work doesn't have to suck. And we all know that working alone does suck. So if you're a freelancer, entrepreneur, remote worker, or even a student here in Central PA, check out coworkinginlancaster.com and consider joining us at the Candy Factory, an awesome co-working space in Lancaster. starting at just $50 a month.
Oh, yeah.
That's for a community membership. You can meet other doers in a super creative and collaborative space, tap into business resources to help you get your job done efficiently, and learn all kinds of new and inspiring stuff through our network of really smart people, i.e. our members and guests. We even have a podcast club for members who want to make their own.
Wink, wink.
There's a membership level for everyone, so don't hesitate. Check it all out at coworkinginlancaster.com. Do it.
Do it.